those relationships, I feel like, kind of filtered themselves out. But also, like, when you stop putting effort into it, you stop watering the plant, like, it kind of dies.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome, and thank you for joining me today on Far Betterment. Again, sorry for last week. I've been kicking myself for that every single day. But this week, we're back on our normal schedule with a new guest. Today, I'm joined by Mandy Gouldy. She is the co-founder of For Her Denver, which is an amazing organization helping to empower women. And we talk a lot about that today. And then she's also the designer and owner of Mystic Life Mala. I encourage you to go check them out. They can be found on mysticlife.mala, M-A-L-A, on Instagram. And I'll also be linking all of this down below. So first of all, I was honored and it was a privilege to speak with Mandy, and I thank her again for being on. So without further ado, here is Mandy Gouldy for Far Betterment.
Hello.
Hi, is this Mandy?
Yeah, this is her.
Hi, Mandy. This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be home.
Yeah, that's always nice, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Makes the world of a difference.
Yeah, it really does. Well, first of all, I mean, I kind of went into this a little blind. I try not to I don't know, do too much research, because I think it's nice to hear this stuff for the first time from whoever's on. I didn't do a whole bunch of research. I didn't look into you too much. So I kind of wanted to hear it from you. But I am interested in, you know, where you're from, things like that, what you do, what you're about.
Okay. So I was born in Southern California. My mom and my dad, they both met there. And when they were actually going through a divorce, when I was like 3 or 4, we moved to Arizona. And I spent the most of my childhood growing up on a ranch in a suburban area. So Chandler, from where I'm from, originally was all these dairy farms. And people started, you know, migrating there and moving. So they started building up all these, you know, apartments in different like housing communities. But my mom got remarried to my stepdad, and she has a love of horses. And so they were able to buy a ranch like in the middle of suburbia. So we kind of had this mixed feelings, a mixed life, I should say, where we woke up to horses and dogs and cats. And then at the end of the street, you're in a suburban area, which was really cool for me. And then when I was about 21, my mom and stepdad split, and we moved, my mom, my sister, my brother, and I moved to Denver, Colorado, and we've been here ever since, almost 10 years next year. So I actually super love Colorado. I actually had a recent work opportunity to move back like directly where I grew up in Chandler, and I really gave it some deep thought, and I was like, absolutely not. Denver's home now. So yeah, kind of how I got to become a transplant in Denver. But this is definitely where I see myself staying, which is kind of a cool, exciting feeling. I was and still kind of have a gypsy heart. So it's interesting to be feeling that way about Denver.
That is interesting, actually. It's weird because I guess I've heard that from a lot of people when they moved to Denver. Mm-hmm. And it's so odd for me to hear because I grew up there. I'm from there. So I guess I don't have that same perspective. Like, I miss it a lot. But mm-hmm. I'm kind of like you. Like, I always wanted to move somewhere. I always wanted to just kind of go.
Yeah.
So you kind of liked moving around. Did you find that hard like as you were a kid, or was it kind of easy for you to just pick up and go and start over?
You know, I think because of my childhood, like, we moved a lot. Mm-hmm. My mom, until she remarried, we moved like, I think every couple of years. And then when they remarried, they bought like a starter home, which is me, my sister and my mom and my stepdad. And then they had my younger brother. So we moved to the bigger house, and that's when they bought that ranch. And I was really there until we moved. So like 14 years we stayed in that house. But ever since I've been in Denver, I've moved in almost every 2 years or so, every other year, I've moved into a new apartment. Like, I just moved into my new apartment here, like about, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. But there was this span of my life when I was about 27. I was having a really tough time emotionally, just in some toxic relationship. And I quit my job and I packed up my car and I took my dog and we drove around the United States for about like 6 months, just kind of couch surfing and staying with friends and family. I have a huge family. And then I made my way up to New York, upstate New York, actually, where my stepdad had moved to after my mom and they had split. And I stayed with him for about 4 months. And then I moved back to Denver. And ever since I've been back, I don't really have that feeling to kind of pick up and move. I think it was an emotional thing. I think I was a runner. And I'm not a runner anymore, I don't think. So it feels kind of nice, I think, that kind of circular change I like to reflect on change. So it's kind of cool to see that about myself.
Actually, I really like that too. So I definitely can relate to you on that level. What do you think it was about that experience traveling the country and stuff that, you know, taught you, or what did you learn from that?
Yeah. I think being the oldest child, I always felt like I had to take care of everybody, and I had to, if they didn't do it, then I would have to pick up after them. And it kind of gave me this mentality of like, no one's going to help me, I better help myself. And I think when I went on my road trip, I didn't have a lot of money saved. It was a spur of the moment kind of decision. I think I had like $2,000 and no plan. And so I just kind of relied on friends and family. Like, I did dog sitting and probably was paid more than I should have been paid to dog sit for such a short period of time. And just really like relying on the people in my life and in the universe to kind of take care of me. And I felt like there was this like really deep healing that I needed, in that area of just being like trusting humanity again, like trusting love and people, and understanding that it's not always going to be like romantic love that saves you. It could be like your friends or your aunt and uncle that I haven't seen in 5 or 6 years. Let me crash on their couch with my dog, you know, not just me. So I think there's just like this deep healing that needed to kind of happen inside of me that I didn't expect to come. And I really think it settled that part of me of like, okay, there's so much out there, but you really can get what you need anywhere you are. So like when I came back to Denver, I just didn't have this like feeling of needing to fill my cup with like the world. It kind of felt like, okay, you kind of create your world no matter where you live, because I had the same feelings and the same experience in different, even when I plopped down in New York for about 4 or 5 months, I felt like I could have been in Denver, you know, just my mom, I had moved out of my apartment or, you know, moved cities or something like that. But I just missed my family a lot. And, that became kind of like the main reason of settling back down into Denver, you know, that's where they are.
So you didn't even have like a time period set. You just left and then kind of just something told you to come back.
Yeah. I had no plan. Literally, it was like, okay, I'm going to Arizona, like where my real dad, my biological dad, I'm still super close, just lives there. And so I was like, I'm just going to go there. I need to get out of Colorado. And then my friend was like, hey, we're going out of town for 3 weeks. Will you come watch our dogs in San Diego? So I went to San Diego. And then my friend was like, hey, I have tickets to Lollapalooza in Chicago. Like, drive up to Chicago. So I went to Chicago. Like, it was crazy. So.
I mean, it sounds really, really cool, though.
Yeah, it was exactly what I needed, but.
What was it like coming back then? Back to Denver.
It was tough.
Yeah.
It was actually tough at first for me because I've been gone for almost a year at that point. No, I was maybe like 10 months. And my family had kind of, you know, my sister had graduated college and moved up to Denver while I was gone. And she and I've always been super, super close. But in that time frame that I was gone, she created this like whole new life that I did. She had got a new job and had these new friends and this new apartment. And, you know, my mom had a boyfriend at the time, and my brother was still, he's a musician who does music. So he was really busy with all of that. So I felt like I came home and I was like, my fam, I'm excited to see you. And it kind of felt like, oh, yeah, 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 you're home. Welcome home. How long are you going to stay this time? Kind of a thing. Oh, wow. And so I really had to like, but I think it was something else that needed to happen, because they were used to me being so independent and saying, oh, yeah, I'll be home. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. And I had to kind of sit down and say like, hey, I miss you. Like, I'm hurting over this. Like, I came home, and just being vulnerable in that sense, was really kind of important for actually all of our relationships, to say like, oh yeah, I am the oldest. I have always told you I don't need you, but I need you. I'm home.
Yeah.
So, it was tough. It was tough.
What finally made it like an easier transition for you? What was it that finally made it feel like home again?
I got a new job, and it was downtown.
Okay.
And I was, when I first came back, I was living with my mom down in Parker, which is probably like, gosh, a really long commute. It was like taking me over an hour and a half to get to work every day. And I was just like hating it. But my sister got me the job where I was working, and she lived downtown. So she actually let me crash with her during the week, like Monday through Friday, until I got an apartment like, I want to say 3 months later. But yeah, so we were spending all concentrated time together and kind of like rebonding. But I also felt grounded by this like new job, because I was like, oh, look, like, and it was, you know, making more money than I had before I left. And it was in a corporate, building downtown. I felt like I finally had my life together, in that sense of like not being, I was in retail before in management. So it was nice to get out of this kind of crazy schedule, jump into that 9 to 5 that we all think we want. And then, working with my sister. And then several months after that, I met my now fiance. So we started dating, and I think that made like such a huge difference, in like feeling like I needed to be there and stay home, stay in Denver.
What do you think it is about relationships that play like such a huge role for you in, I guess, how you view home?
That's a really deep, good question. I've always had such strong relationships with everyone in my family, even like as we're going through, you know, divorces and moving and, you know, kind of these tumultuous times, that I really think I draw strength from them without realizing it. And when I went on that trip, I think I really came to terms with like how important those people are to me, and essentially too, like how important I am to them. Because sometimes I got so caught up in this fact of like, I need to escape, I need to get away. And I didn't think about how those, me leaving them, would affect them. I just had this mindset of like, leave, leave, leave. And I really think that I want to have these strong relationships so that they ground me and make me feel like I, you know, like I can be myself 100%. And I don't think I've ever used my, like my closest relationships for that. I think I was trying to get this validation from the universe or the world or Instagram or whatever you want to say, to like feed that cup. And I think now I realize that relationships can do that, and they've just become that much more important to me. And that sense of home, like you mentioned, is like your home is where, it's so cliche, but where your home is where your heart is. But it's so true. Like, it's something I didn't realize until I got older. Like, because, you know, and all my friends moved away. Like when we went to college, I just didn't have that home base, especially like when, and in college, my mom and stepdad were splitting up. So it was like, I moved to a new place as well. I just didn't trust them, I don't think. And now I really, really trust these people, these, you know, even my fiance's parents. We've cultivated like a nice relationship to where like, it would be really hard to think about waking up every week and being like, oh, I don't have any of these people. I don't have spend time with them on the weekends. We're not, you know, I don't want to waste time, you know, filling it with other things anymore.
What do you think it is this will be, maybe this is an odd question, but, and I don't know how much stock I put into like birth order or whatever. I don't know if I've ever been one of those people, but now that you mention it, I think you and I have grown up a little bit similarly. Like my mom's moved around a lot, been divorced and, we, you know, I'm the oldest, so I definitely can relate to that. You know, you took care of yourself a lot and you had to help it a lot and stuff. What do you think it is about being the oldest maybe that made you trust less or that made trust so important to you? Do you think that does have something to do with it being oldest, or do you think it's just you personally going through those experiences? And now that I say it, maybe this is kind of a selfish question.
No. I totally think that being the oldest has had such a huge impact on me, but I also believe like not only like birth order, but like my astrological sign and how it plays into the people that I am surrounded by, their signs, and just how much different I am than my mom, because she was born, like, she has 8 brothers and sisters, and she was born dead center, like middle child. Wow. And then my dad, my real dad, is the oldest. And his, oh no, he's not the oldest, he's the middle as well. No, there's one older than him, so, and then 2 younger, there's 4. So he's also not the oldest. So I think they never like grew up in the way, I hope they're not, maybe they're listening to this, but this is my perception of them is that, that they never had to do that. They were never the one that said, okay, well, no, we're not going to be able to, mom's not going to take us to the water park unless you have cleaner rooms and you two are refusing to do it. So I'll just do it. So we all get to go. And I think that that has such like an impact on how I even viewed my parents. Like I should take care of them. You know, my mom and dad got divorced when I was 3 or 4. And we've had these conversations that were like, they were very emotionally distraught and not really put together after that. And as a 4-year-old Virgo who like has this type A personality, me, and seeing, you know, our life kind of, I don't want to say fall apart, but just change in a way that you don't really trust the landscape of it anymore. And that you don't really know, like, well, are you going to get back together? Who's this new guy my mom's dating? Who's this new woman my father's dating? Who are their kids? Like just not trusting the future anymore and feeling this sense of nostalgia for like when it all made sense. and feeling kind of normal. I think that being the oldest and not like also being old enough, not at 4 or 5, but like at 8 or 9 to see and understand those things makes such a difference than versus like when my sister was, you know, 6 or 2 when they got divorced, just a very different perception of what was going on. So I really think that has played this huge part in trust for me and how important it is like for me to let down my walls and let someone take care of me, because once they start, I'm trusting that they will. And if they stop, that would really be like a deal breaker in that relationship or friendship or whatever the, even if it's with a job, like that's something that's important to me too. You know, I left my retail position because they completely changed the structure of how they were making money. Like it went to commission based, and before we were, you know, hourly, and we could count on that salary. And now it was like, well, you better, you know, hustle if you want to make the same or, and or more. So it's just interesting that you mentioned that, because I think it's true.
No, that's interesting that you say that, because that really rings very true for me as well. And I guess I never really thought of it that way. For me, it was always kind of like, trust is huge for me too. If I don't trust you anymore, it's really hard for me to continue, any kind of relationship with you at all, whether it's friendship or even, father, son relationship, like anything. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for me to see things through at that point. And I'm kind of like you too. I'm a runner for sure. It sounds like you've grown out of that. I think I'm still right in the midst of it. What do you think so comforting about running?
I think I used to be addicted to that feeling of newness. of like, okay, they don't know me. I can be anyone today. All those mistakes that I made, those are washed clean. Not only like for a romantic reason, this person doesn't know why my past relationship messed up, or this new job doesn't know any follies that I may have. And I'm such a person who beats myself up so hard for even like the most smallest mistakes, where the other, you know, the person at the on the receiving end of that, whether it's my boss or a friend or whatever, has not even thought of it again, you know, twice. And I've, you know, lost sleep over it, you know? Yeah. And so for me, I think that feeling, it's not just the running of like the freedom of it. It's more like the promise of a new start, I think, was so enticing to me to say like, okay, I'm washed clean of whatever mistakes I've made. Now I get a new try. It's a new day, a new whatever. And I think that was intoxicating. It was, I don't know, someone who's striving to be perfect all the time, Virgo, that's me, it's difficult to kind of, it's easy to own up to the mistakes, but it's hard to live with them, I think, for me. So I'm the first one to apologize and the first one to say I was wrong. I don't have like an ego that way, but I think if I'm not immediately forgiven, if this person holds a grudge or something like that, the relationship would potentially start to crumble, because then I wouldn't be able to forgive myself, and then I wouldn't feel comfortable in the relationship anymore. So yeah. And I think why that's changed for me is that I've realized that if I change, the people I surround myself will change. So I won't pick relationships that don't make sense romantically. I won't pick friends that are proven to be flaky, so that I have to deal with, you know, that anticipation of maybe being abandoned. And I can trust that landscape of that relationship or that friendship or that job or whatever it else may be. And it's funny, I have a lot of single friends, even though I'm in my early 30s, and they always say, like, you always seem like you didn't want to be in a relationship, and now you're getting married. Like, what changed? And I think the biggest thing that I felt was that I became committed to being committed. I was okay to be the person that felt more or believed more or trusted more. And obviously I have a partner that actually matches me in that sense. So there is no feelings of like distrust between us. Like, I, you know, neither of us think that we would wake up one day and the person would roll over and be like, yeah, I just don't think this is working anymore. So I think that takes so much anxiety and fear and off the table, that it's easy once that change kind of like happens.
Oh yeah, I think yeah, trust is definitely a motivating factor. Just in general, in any relationship, in any, like you were saying, even work. You didn't happen to work in wireless, by the way, did you?
Wireless? No.
It sounds exactly like what I used to do. I used to work in wireless. Yeah, and they did the same thing. Went from hourly plus bonus to commission-based. It was horrible. And I did the same thing as you. I was like, yep, career change. I was done. Yeah. That's so funny.
I'm out.
Yep. here's maybe another question that's kind of, I don't know if this is a selfish question. Definitely the other one was more for myself, I think. But what made you, talked a little bit about like being able to look at relationships and look at friendships and things and kind of like weed those out a little bit. What makes you brave enough to be so selective about your circle? Because that's a hard thing to do. You know, yeah, it's a really hard thing to do at any age.
I think, you know, honestly, a little bit of it was that if I can be very, I think as we get older, there isn't such as where I'm not going out on a Friday night. I'm not, you know, meeting up with a group of friends who's already out or something like that. And I haven't maybe for probably like the past like 4 or 5 years. But I think that detracts so much from a friendship of an easy breezy. Everyone's expecting to go out on a Friday and you just invite anyone. Mm-hmm. It's so different when you say, let's meet for coffee, and you have this intimate, vulnerable conversation about what's going on in that person's life versus slamming shots to loud music and flirting with people at the bar. You know what I mean? You get older, those relationships, those friendships kind of like filter themselves out. And I want to say that kind of happened for me a little bit, because you know, I didn't want to be doing that. So those kind of like, you know, peripheral friends that I wasn't really putting that energy into, just inviting them out, kind of went their own way. And then the friends that I still do have, there's so much time and effort that goes into maintaining those that I feel like they match me there too. But also, like, we will go 3 weeks, 6 weeks without hanging out, and I'll send a text like, hey, my birthday's coming up. We're doing this. Oh yeah, I'll definitely be there. Love to see you then. Kind of a thing. And we catch up like there's no time has passed. And I think that those are the only types of friends I have now. Because I was traveling a lot for work, and I was, you know, building this relationship, and I have two beautiful animals, but also I haven't had my own car for 4 years. I was in a really bad car accident, and I totaled my car, and I made a decision that I already live downtown. I don't need this car. It's giving me anxiety driving in the downtown area. And after this accident, I totally don't want to be driving in the downtown area. It also cut me off from some of my other friends as well that didn't live near downtown. If they were like, say, in Boulder, an hour away or whatever. But luckily, my closest friends here, Ashley and Sam, shout out, because I know they're going to listen to this.
thank you to both of them.
Yeah, kiss, kiss. They both have a job downtown as well, so we can spend some time together during the work week. But also, I feel like we make time for each other in the important moments, but also, you know, we make that effort to still stay connected, even though, you know, they have their own boyfriends and one has a husband. And, I also spend a lot of time with my sister. So we are only 16 months apart, age-wise. And so we're very close in, you know, just how our lives are intertwined. Those relationships, I feel like, kind of filtered themselves out, but also like when you stop putting effort into it, you stop watering the plant, like it kind of dies and everyone can kind of walk away. Like no one's at fault there, you know? So
I love that.
I feel like, yeah.
That is maybe one of the most profound things I've heard on here in a very long time. No offense to anybody else that's been on, but like that's a very profound thing to say. I really like that. Yeah. I don't want to take up like all your time not talking about for her. Like that to me, I have a daughter. So that's completely changed like my entire perspective on, you know, I grew up with women. My mom and my grandma raised me, and I always kind of thought like, oh, I know how this works. And I had a daughter, and I had no clue how clueless I was until her. Which I love. Yeah. Like I love learning, you know, about her and what she wants. I mean, she's still really young. She's 2, but she's a constant learning experience for all of us, I think. So tell me a little bit about For Her and what you guys are about and how you founded it and, you know, like how it got started and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So For Her is a female empowerment group. We started off, I have 2 friends that are an artist, Chelsea and Brooke, and they had this amazing idea of using pictures of women in their community of friends to create this larger landscape photo to just display women and what they're experiencing now. And we decided we wanted to make this huge event kind of showcasing that. And from that point, it turned in from that into this, now we're going to raise money for a charity. And now we're going to get, you know, big brands like Four Noses and Casamigos donating alcohol. And we're going to get this big space. And we're going to have all these women come and talk about their own experiences with whoever shows up. And then we also wanted to hang on to that importance of what art can do to change people, music, you know, painting, any kind of, you know, street art, anything like that really has been at the forefront of cultural change for the last 100 years. But we really wanted to be able to showcase that as well. So we reached out to local female and male artists in the Denver community and asked if they wanted to donate a piece of art for the charity or to the event to raise money for the charity. And it would be female focused, whatever their artwork turned out to be. And then we also asked them to tell us what female empowerment meant to them. And it turned into this such an amazing thing. But I feel like I grew so much as a woman in that time, because it's hard for women sometimes to stand up and say, no, I am standing up for myself and other women, and I'm not going to, you know, that's kind of challenging in the political environment. But even to your friends and family, they may not understand why you want to stand up for something that isn't directly impacting you. You have a good job. You're not struggling with any kind of, I have my own obstacles, don't get me wrong, but some of those fundamental basic things that people need, and they're not being able to get them just based on whatever's going on in their life. So that's why we picked Women with a Cause Foundation, and we raised a little over $2,000 for them. And we were able to get 150 people at this event. And we kind of decided, Brooke, Chelsea, and I, and then there's a few other members, Sasha and Amber, who helped market it. They have some background in nonprofit and video marketing. And they were able to help us reach such a larger community of people. And just seeing that they wanted to show up for these types of events, that they knew it was female empowerment and that it meant something to them as well, really just gave us that confidence to say, okay, we need to do this again. So I actually have a new event coming up. It's October 11th. We are doing something different, because before, our previous event was just to directly raise money for a female empowerment or female health group, Women with a Cause Foundation. This next event is, we wanted to find other women who were like us, who wanted to do more in the community, but didn't know how and just needed help figuring out how they were going to do that. So in a sense, we became sort of like event planners. And so we connected with someone named Natalie and Jerry. They are advocates for Feel the Beat, which is a dance studio for deaf children. And they're just two women who, you know, the charity was founded by Jerry. She was a elementary school teacher, and she decided, I want to do more for this underserved community. So she quit her job, created this dance studio, and this has been her life the last 2 years. And then Natalie, knowing myself and for her, reached out and said, we want to do something. We want to raise money. And we saw your last event. Like, how can we, you know, partner together to make this an event? So next one's more about fun, but we really wanted to empower them and kind of, you know, not pass the buck, but like pay it forward. Pay it forward in what we learned from what we did before. And so now it's just become kind of this cool community of women that we want them to know like they're supported. And in any of their interests, we'll be happy to kind of partner with them. On a deeper level for me, though, my backstory is, you know, I don't want to get into politics because I don't want to isolate anyone or alienate anyone, but
understandable. Yeah.
I am so grateful for what's happened over the last few years. So many more people are involved in what's going on. So many more people have opinions who didn't have opinions before. I feel like the next presidential race is going to be so interesting to see who comes out and who has actual gained knowledge and has important educated opinions about what's going on, because I know that's happened for me. I went to the Women's March in Denver in 2016, and I felt so, I don't want to say embarrassed, but like overshadowed by all these strong women who were, you know, wearing, you know, provocative signs and clothing and just saying, I'm a strong woman. This is who I am. And I'm not afraid to show it. And I was just kind of in a sweatshirt and jeans, like, I'm here, I'm showing up for everybody, but I don't feel like I could be someone that was like that. And now, between now and then, I feel like I've completely embraced that side of, like, it's okay to have a belief. It's okay if someone has a different belief, and it's okay to coexist and not feel threatened by, you know, someone else, but also not allowing that to, like, make me feel like I have to shrink anything that I believe. I can still have those beliefs and still go walk in a women's march and have a provocative sign that doesn't, you know, it's not going to single me out, or it's okay. And I think that that's what for her has empowered me to do. And I think that's why we want to stay connected to women in that sense of, like, you can be a strong, powerful woman, no matter what you choose to do, just do something. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I see for her as, and I see the future for her being. You know, I'm a co-founder, so we all have our thoughts and ideas, So that's what it's really been important and special for me to be a part of this group of women.
Do you find this is maybe this is an odd question, especially coming from a male perspective. And I think it is different out there in Colorado. I think it's a lot more progressive. I'm in North Carolina, and you know, nothing against North Carolina, but it is not, it's a red state. I mean, just to be completely blunt about it and frank, it's a red state, and it's not necessarily as progressive, and it doesn't, I'm trying not to get political myself either.
it's hard. But, I mean, we all have thoughts and opinions.
It is. And I think we probably line up pretty well on that end. But, or hopefully. But I guess my question is, do you think that in the last few years, women have come together more than they used to? Or do you find that it's kind of tough to get women to, I don't want to say like get out of their shell, because I don't think that's the right term, but maybe not feel as oppressed, or maybe there is still some of that oppression, and or they're scared to have opinions because maybe they're afraid of being shot down or put down or overshadowed. Or do you feel that you've seen that change in the last few years?
You know, I think I've seen a little bit of both. I think I've seen some divisiveness of, like, you know, people of privilege, whether they're male or female, you know, it's, they see it as something that is not a problem because it doesn't directly affect them. There's that side, like, that's not my problem, so I'm not going to worry about it. And then there's this other group of people, women and men, who are saying, like, I may have to not worry about that, but I still view it as a problem, and I'm still going to stand up for it. I'm still going to express my beliefs. And I think that between women, that's even more easy to see, because I think it's easy to say, it's easy to say, this doesn't affect me, and I'm not worried about if it's going to affect my daughter in the future, because that's in the future and I live in the now, and I'm not going to worry about it. I want, you know, more money in my pocket, or whatever their reason for avoiding that problem. And I see the women who have the ability to be empathetic and to join together and say, okay, I'm not facing this obstacle, but I don't want anyone to face this obstacle. And I want us to come together and stand up for that. And I see that those groups are aligning themselves more with each other. So I feel like they are coming together, but not necessarily crossing that line of, what their morals or what they view their values as. You know, I remember very distinctly in 2016, one of my friends on Facebook posted, like, I don't get why anyone is going to these marches. You have everything you need. You should be happy. And I'm thinking, how can you stand there and say that everybody in the whole world that's a female has what they need when you haven't even stepped outside of your box to speak to anyone or experience what they may be experiencing. I think, you know, this particular person didn't have to work, and their husband made quite a bit of money, and I'm sure they had everything that they need, but they aren't a single mother or a single woman trying to afford a life without getting married. One income in their 30s. That's very challenging if you have like a entry to mid-level job.
Absolutely.
And it's so different. Like, they can't even see that as an obstacle, because they are thinking probably, why isn't this person married? Who cares? That's not ability. You don't have the right to talk about anyone else's experience. You can only say, like, I have everything I need. I it's okay to me that my husband makes more than his female coworker who's doing the same job, because that doesn't directly affect me. And those are the types of people who have gotten us to this circumstance, I think. Right now, where we are so divided, because they don't have that ability to look outside themselves at all, because they are so cushioned. And this particular person is from a red state as well. And that's why it so directly affected me, because I didn't realize that I came from a state like that, Arizona. And being in Colorado and being surrounded by people that truly align with my values, it's comforting. But then you start to forget about the rest of the world, or the rest of the United States, I should say, that have such differing views. And it's good to be challenged by those. Like, I didn't delete that person as a friend. I just took that as like, okay, she's speaking from more than just herself. She feels whoever she's in her Facebook group or whoever's reacting to these messages, she feels safe to say that. And she's probably surrounded herself with other people that feel the same way as her. So she maybe isn't getting information or really doesn't understand, oh, that person's just homeless, or that person lives in the dump because they don't have a job or they didn't go to college or whatever. And it's just unfortunate that that's kind of what's dividing women. That line of like, I want to fight for other women and I want to just live in my bubble. And yeah, for her really tries to break down those boundaries by bringing those women together, by creating an environment that doesn't say we feel this way or that way. We just want to bring you guys all together to experience either some beautiful donated art or like our upcoming event, Good Vibrations, some really fun music and some really good beer from River North Brewery, and just have a good time and talk to each other. Maybe learn something new, maybe make a new friendship that expands your bubble on life and maybe who you had empathy for, where you maybe you wouldn't have made that connection before. So
you talked a little bit about people being afraid to cross that line, or well, not necessarily afraid, but not willing to cross that line, you know, living in their comfort mm-hmm. zone. How do we get people to cross that line, men and women? How do we get them to cross that line and kind of like stick up for what's right, I guess? I don't want to say what's right, because of course, you know, everybody has their own views of what right is. But, you know, I guess touching more on for her specifically, how do we get people to cross that line?
You know, I think that's something that is a challenge, because of course, when we are posting events and people that are following us probably have more liberal views. Mm. And so the only way that we're going to be able to grow that is just to continue to spread that message of like unity, I think, and not emphasizing our personal beliefs, but just expressing that we want to talk about what it feels like to be a woman right now, whether you are on that side of, I'm not willing to cross that boundaries and I'm really happy with where I'm at, or on the other side of like, I don't have everything I want and I need this, or, you know, I have everything I want and I see my girlfriend struggling and I want to help, you know, whatever that is for that person. We don't want to say either position is incorrect, just that we want everyone to come together and feel empowered to feel whatever they want to feel. So if that person never gets out of their bubble and says, I never want to stand up for someone, I never want to go to a women's march, or I never want to go to another For Her event because I felt whatever, that's totally fine. With me and us, I think we just want to continue to give them that opportunity to expand their bubble and to feel empowered. And hopefully they never have to face something that's going to force them to see the challenges in life. For example, if that friend of mine on Facebook gets divorced and now she hasn't had a career for the last, let's say she's 50, she hasn't had a career for 30 years. She has, you know, two probably teenagers, and her husband says, I'm not going to give you alimony, or I'm only going to give you this much money. What do you do then? Like, what does a person like that do except maybe go get a job and then see how tough it would be to be a single mother, making, I don't know, $20 an hour. And that's probably on the high end. So yeah, I think until people experience, either they're born empathetic and they're raised empathetic and they see the changes that need to be made, or they experience something that forces them to understand these challenges and have some empathy for themselves and more sympathy for themselves, but also empathy for other people that may have it a different way. So yeah, just that's our only mission, is to give them that opportunity to meet us head on and meet the issues at hand, you know, not really putting their head in the sand anymore.
You brought up something like really interesting to me, actually. You were saying it's hard for people to know what it's like to be a woman right now. What does it feel like to be a woman right now? I don't know if that's a weird or way too broad of a question, but I guess I'm, you know, I don't understand. I'm, you know, just some guy. Like, I have no idea what you're going through, or, you know, like, as a male with a daughter, I want mm-hmm. to be part of the solution. I want to make sure she grows up in a world where it's not about male or female, where it's just about a person. You know, we try very hard to raise her as just a human, which is really difficult to do anyway, you know.
Yeah.
It's nearly impossible to do in this world. And it, just kind of bridging off of that question, you know, what it feels like to be a woman, what can men do to like be empowering, or, you know, because I think I've taken like the get out of the way approach. You know, I just get out of her way and let her just be, and wait for her to ask me, you know, and at two, she doesn't ask much, or she asks a lot and you just never know what you're going to get. But yeah, like, well, what does it feel like?
I think too, like, for boundaries, I think parenting boundaries are going to be really different than, you know, when she's at two versus 15.
Oh, sure.
But,
absolutely.
I think being a woman right now for me, I'm 30, so it's very different for me right now than it is for a 15-year-old. And I think that has so much to do with social media, and we could really dive deep into how that can affect the psyche more than, say, like how a magazine would have been, or, you know, a TV show would have been, you know, giving you information on how you should or who you should be. I think social media gives you a direct line to what we feel the universe is telling us to be. So if I post a picture and my face looks like one certain way and I only get 5 likes, and then I post a selfie 2 weeks later and I'm doing something else and I get 50 likes, I'm going to think that 50 likes person or version of myself is what people want to see. And I think that's so challenging, even at 30, maybe not so much now, but maybe when I was 25, how that was telling me I should be. And now I can't even imagine being 14, 15, 13 years old with an Instagram or social media account and all these people I maybe don't even know telling me directly, like direct loop of feedback, what they like and who I should be and what version of myself I should put forward. Because that's such a challenging thing as you get older as a woman, is like figuring out who you are, and not just like where you fit in, because it's not about all that, but like how comfortable you are in situations. Like, I think, you know, the big wave right now of how popular Lizzo is with her song about I'm 100% that B, which is whoever you want to be. And I think that's so important for women to like kind of embrace. And it's so challenging, like so hard to figure out who that person is, but being comfortable with it. So being a woman right now really feels like you're bumping up against a bunch of walls, and you're blindfolded and you don't know where those walls are going to be. I think, and especially being someone who was raised like in a family that says you can, you know, we believe in you, you can do whatever you want, and the sky's the limit. I think entering into the real world and realizing that it's not just, you can't just believe yourself into being something. There's a lot of obstacles that are going to be that you have to overcome, and I think it's going to change that how it. The world that your daughter is going to enter into when she's 18 is so different than the world that I entered into when I was 18. The political landscape, what the jobs look like, what the people believe of around them. There's been such an embracing of young people around sexuality, whether you know, how you identify as a female. Are you, you know, born a certain way and now you identify as a female? That wasn't, I've never met in my childhood. I had never experienced that. And now this is like place. And I think that that's going to really influence us as we get older, how the world looks, because they're just embracing this fluidity of male and female, but also masculine and feminine, and all of those roles are being switched up. So you're not just expecting when you get hired, your director to be, you know, a man in his 50s, white, middle-aged, and he's the boss. It could look like completely different. And I think that's really exciting. And I think that's what gives us a lot of hope, is that as these younger generations start entering into the, you know, the political environment, like how they can vote, but also the workforce, And they start to change the way that the United States is changing, and they get to kind of sculpt that and mold that. And I still could get to be a part of that world, you know, I'll only be 50 or so, maybe a little younger. And I get to experience that. That's something, and I get to be, and I get to like help encourage and raise my own kids in that landscape and in that environment. So I think that's really exciting to have hope for that. And I don't think it's something we should shy away from. I think it's something that we should embrace. I don't want to be that older person that's like, these young kids nowadays, they don't get it. And it's like, no, they do get it. They yeah. do get it. They get it more than us. And I think that's so exciting to me. So
that's so yeah. nice to hear. Because I totally agree. Yeah. It's their world now, you know, or it will be. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we have no business telling them how to run it at a certain point, I think. Yeah, it's just not up to us anymore at that point.
We're just even all these like old people voting. Like, you're 8, you're 90.
I hear you. Yeah, it's not the good old days anymore.
Yeah.
Term limits and all that. Oh, geez. Don't even get me started.
I believe it.
Oh, geez. Now I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, not your fault at all. I just agree with you so much on so many different things.
Yay.
That's always nice. Yeah. It's great when you agree with people, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Conflict
sucks. Sure. Yeah, of course. But I mean, I like what you said about that. And it is nice to be able to learn from those experiences as well. And actually, I really liked what you said about your friend. You didn't stop being friends with that friend. You know, you saw it from their perspective and how they felt safe saying that. Mm-hmm. I think that rings 100% true too. And I think I probably could use a little bit more of that in my life. A little bit more tolerance on that end. But I guess, what have you learned? I know you talked a lot about this, but through like the creation of For Her, besides, you know, obviously you guys have grown quite a bit, it sounds like, and it seems like you guys are really doing a great job empowering women and getting women together and creating dialogue and starting discussions. But what have you seen like specifically change that makes you like hopeful for the future?
I've just seen directly in our group, mm-hmm. the co-founders between Chelsea, Brooke, and I've just seen that the group has empowered everybody to probably be who they've always been and just feel completely accepted by that and by each other. You know, we have busy personal lives, we have busy careers, and other things that are important to us. But I feel like the beginning of that, it's strength to maybe step out onto a new journey or to really believe in themselves. For example, one of the co-founders, Chelsea Yadamio, opened up a bar off Broadway with her family called Mural Bar. And it showcases different street art artists on the walls after For Her started. And I'm not saying For Her like did that, but maybe, Chelsea, if you're listening, I'm just saying that maybe you felt empowered to do that for yourself because you knew that you had some support, but you also trusted in women that would come out and support you, and you made some great connections there. And then for Brooke, you know, she's been really pursuing her art career and helped open up a new place called Denver Selfie Museum, which has all these different collective of artists who came out and made these really cool little, what I would call traditional selfie backgrounds. So like big angel wings or, you know, Brooke's signature piece is a smiley face. A big red smiley face or yellow smiley face. So she's really been able to expand a career that way. And for me, I feel like I am more confident in myself, to continue to have, you know, strong, educated conversations about, women and For Her. And also, you know, I have my own little side business. I make malas, and that's really helped me kind of come out of my shell to express who I've always been, but like to put your artwork and your creativity out there is such a challenge. And it's really a kudos to people, because there's always going to be someone who has an opinion, and it's hard to, you know, it can be challenging to be feel judged by other people, whether it's they don't buy my jewelry or they don't appreciate your artwork, that's whatever, but it can be a challenge. It can, but for her, I can say it doesn't faze me anymore. I don't feel like shaken about it. It's just like, okay, well, I went to this event and I only sold 2 bracelets. That doesn't mean everyone who came by and most of it didn't like me. They just didn't want to buy a bracelet, you know? So I think there's such a profound strength and confidence that I have from this group, but also just applying that for the rest of my life and making it feel like it's true and giving myself feedback and, you know, overcoming obstacles like that. I think that's what for her said for me. So yeah, that's kind of the basis for all of that and why we've been working hard to continue it.
What is, this question probably won't have an answer, but, I guess it's more of a long-term question. What does success with For Her look like to you? And I don't want to make you speak for the co-founders, your other co-founders, but, yeah. But what does it look like to you?
Gosh. I honestly haven't thought about that. And the fact that you said it probably doesn't have an answer is probably a good answer, but I just want to always have it be there. Even if we have something that comes up and we need to take a couple months off and focus on whatever's going on in our rest of our lives, that it's there for other people, mm-hmm. and that they've made networking connections so that they can continue to either have events or connect with us and we can support them. And then always being able to pick it back up and create this following of support of like, yeah, we know life gets busy and yeah, we know things can get in the way. No matter what you're working on. And so I think, that's kind of what the success looks like, is that it never dies, but it's always there. And that, it doesn't always have to be, you know, like fed daily, that we can feed ourselves from kind of what we learned and what other people maybe got from our events. And then, you know, we can post Instagram stuff as reminders and we can support other women. There's quite a few other women's groups in Colorado that I've met and really enjoy spending time with. So even just like giving them a shout out and giving people, you know, just a place to come and comment on our stuff or reach out to somebody about what's going on is really like, for me, what success looks like with the group.
That was a great answer, actually. that was an amazing answer. Yeah, that was great. Well, I guess we're almost out of time here, but I guess I'll leave you with one final question. What inspires you? And you can answer this as a woman or just as a human, and keeps you motivated.
I've been asked this kind of few times. Back when I was interviewing for a job a couple years ago, I had this interviewer ask me, he was all bragging about all these commissions I could make if I work like 70 hours a week, if I just really put my heart into it. And I was like, yeah, man, but money doesn't motivate me. Mm-hmm. Money, at the end of the week, I'm getting an extra $500 isn't going to want to make me work 70 hours in a week. That doesn't motivate me to show up strong. What would make me show up strong is if I truly believed in what I was doing and I knew that I was making an impact. And I think that that's truly, truly what motivates me, is that if I know what I'm doing is making an impact, for example, like with my malas, I haven't met everyone that's purchased a bracelet or a necklace for me, because I sell them at 2 different studios, yoga studios. But I know in the world that they're wearing them and they know that they were made from love and that they are hopefully having an impact on them or giving them some sense of solace for whatever they're going through. So I think like that's what motivates me to make and continue my mala business. Knowing that I have an impact on the people that I work with at work motivates me more than completing a project does. And with my friendships, I think that motivating me to continue to be like a strong person and for her and with my friends and standing up and saying, hey, I am for female empowerment. I am for you. I am for me. I am for her. Knowing that that could have an impact on how they, maybe not right now, but 5 years from now or 2 years from now, 2 weeks from now, when they're going through something and they remember that I support this type of thing, that they'll reach out to me in my group. And no matter what that is, we can try and support them or connect them in a way that we can. And I think that's what motivates me, is like being that force or that friend that someone's looking for, no matter what, like, so that glue, to stay grounded and get through whatever they're getting through. I also want to point out that this week is suicide prevention week. So I think that that's something that's super important to, for her as well. Just knowing that, this is still happening to people, and it's happened to, you know, friends and family, they've maybe suffered a loss that way. So this week's really important to us and to me personally. So I just love the fact that, we can be a friend and that I can be that friend for somebody else. I think that's what motivates me, is just to always be open. And, it also motivates me to express myself so that people know kind of like who I am and where I stand. So thanks for doing this podcast, because that's allowing me to share that with more people. So.
No, thank you for bringing that up. Actually, that, you know, we don't know each other, but that actually means a lot to me personally as well. I actually have like a whole website and blog about it, and that I started a couple years ago. And so that means quite a lot. And I'm really appreciative that you brought that up. So thank you.
Of course.
Just for myself as well. But you know, before we go, 100%. I do want to talk about Mystic Life and where people can like buy those, the malas and stuff. And because I want to make sure that we get all that out there. For those people that don't know, and myself included, like I've seen malas, and but you know, I don't really know much about them or what they're about or anything. And I wanted to bring them up earlier, but I didn't know
I wanted to fit
this in. If you wanted to keep it separate from For Her, or if it was part, and I didn't want to like force you to.
Yeah. So I was raised a very spiritual person, and not necessarily religious, but a very spiritual family. And we just, my mom took us to all kinds of what people would think were weird things. Like, we had animal communicators come to our house, and we had some Buddhist monks that were in town in Arizona for an event come bless our home, because my mom, of course, knew the people that were hosting them, you know, just kind of things like that. And so I've always just had such an open mind about what the universe can give us, and doesn't always have to be through some sort of religious book or teachings. It could be a tactile thing, like a mala. So a mala itself is the Buddhist equivalent of a rosary. So you use it to kind of keep count. The beads, there's 108 beads. Every bead can either be like a breath in and out for a meditation, or it could be a mantra that you say 108 times. And it kind of gives you that counting effect like a rosary would. But also you can wear it as a reminder of whatever your mantra is. What's really exciting about Mystic Life, and something that I think is the most important part of it, is the specific stones, and the beads are made from stones. So the specific stones that you pick for your mala could be so representative of what you're going through right now and how you want to like almost will yourself out of that. You know, so for example, there's rose quartz, and I make a lot of malas with rose quartz, and rose quartz is about self-love, self-care, self-healing. And so if you're wearing this like physical representation of that, you want to take care of yourself and you want to love yourself, and no matter what you're going through, that can give you a reminder of those feelings of, you know, self-love, that's the most important thing that this mala can do for you or for anybody. And so that's kind of where Mystic Life came from. It has kind of been on a journey. One of my friends taught me how to make them, and I was like, blasted out of my heart to make these. I was like, I just have to get my own creations into the world. And I started doing like all this advertising and marketing, and got them into several studios, and had like a website. I'm sorry, can you still hear me?
Yeah, now I can. It did cut out there for a second.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
And so just this just really wanted to get my creations out there in the world. And so right now I have them for sale at Yoga Pod Lowry. So that's like in Southeast Denver. And then I have my Instagram account where people can just message me and we can chat about kind of what they're going through. I get to know them and I can make some suggestions about what stones I think would be best for their malas or their bracelets. Or I'm also actually going to be at three different events this coming through the end of the year, October 27th, November 16th, and December 21st. I'm supporting this group called La Luna Yoga, and maybe we can tag this later so they can see. But they're going to be having some events at the end of the year on the dates that I mentioned. So I'll be there as one of their vendors. It's going to be just been something that's kept me grounded. I mean, interacting with the stones and their properties, you can't help but absorb that. And just knowing that I'm making them for other people and helping them through something, whether or not I'm actually there and they may never have even met me or will meet me. It's kind of really just like a cool feeling to know that that's something I'm out there doing. So, yeah.
I will absolutely put your Instagram up and I will put up the events also, and we'll go ahead and tag that other Instagram as well, because I absolutely want people to know about these. And I'm just looking at your Instagram right now, and they're beautiful. I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, All the credit to you. I mean, they are stunning. Like, they really are beautiful. Sorry, I'm just looking at your page right now, so I'm a little distracted. Yes, I apologize.
No.
I really like this white one here. white and jasper. I'm going to remember that one, actually.
Yes.
Because actually, no joke, I might be inquiring here, maybe in the next day or two.
You got my number.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for being on. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for sharing with me. And I really feel like I learned something today. Hopefully I learned something that I can kind of like pass on. And hopefully those listening learned quite a bit, because I think we can all learn a lot from the people in our lives and how to treat other people. And I hope that most importantly, we take what you said about empathy to heart. I think the world can use a lot more empathy in it. And I thank you and For Her and the founders of For Her to like for trying to put more empathy into the world and for empowering women, especially as a father of a daughter. I appreciate people like you to help her grow into like a strong person, a strong woman. And I really hope that I know my wife's a strong woman, so she's got her as a good example, but I really hope that, I don't know. I hope it changes, you know?
Well, I feel like you said a lot of my heart feelings too. This was such an amazing experience, and I'm so appreciative that we were able to connect tonight. And I was, you know, able to be on Far Betterment. It's meant a lot to me. I've never done anything like this before, and to have such a gracious host as yourself, Andrew, I can't
thank you
enough. It's so easy. You really did, and I just honestly, like, from the bottom of my heart, encourage you to keep doing this for other people. It's been so magical for me. So I hope you do, and. So, yeah, thank you.
No, thank you. That really means a lot. It really does, especially times where I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I should keep going. it's nice to hear those things. So thank you. I mean, really, the honor's all mine. You know, without people like you willing to share your story with me, you know, there wouldn't be a Far Betterment at all. So thank you. And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't.
There's really no reason.